Hi, I'm Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. Today is Friday, February 21st, 2014, and this is the 15th episode of the show. You can find the show at theastrologypodcast.com, and you can also listen to us on iTunes. My co-host today is Arizona-based astrologer Patrick Watson, and our topic is the subject of electing birth charts for a newborn baby, and some of the ethical and practical issues surrounding that. So, Patrick, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been, I think, almost a year since our last podcast together when we recapped the astrology of the 2012 presidential election. And it's been kind of an eventful year for you, I think, right?
I would say so.
Right.
Definitely.
You had a baby last month on, January 24th, 2014?
That's right. Yeah, at 1:04 p.m. exactly. I made sure to get the time as precisely as possible.
Right.
So that was right on the dot, 1:04 p.m. And that ended up being important because it came really, really close to the ascendant being in another sign, but he ended up being 29 Taurus rising.
Okay. And his name is?
James Patrick Watson.
All right. Excellent. So, yeah, so you knew maybe 9 months, I guess, before then, 8 or 9 months, that you were going to have a baby. And somewhere towards the end of the pregnancy, you realized that they were going to have to, you're going to have a C-section, basically, because there were complications. So you're actually put in a unique and interesting situation that I think we thought would be interesting to talk about, because we discussed it before James was actually born, which is, you guys had to schedule a date in order to do the C-section. And so you were met with sort of this interesting philosophical issue as an astrologer, which was whether or not to exercise some control from an astrological perspective in terms of trying to elect the birth chart for your first child, basically. And that was kind of an interesting place to be in. How did that feel, or what were some of your thoughts once you realized that's what was happening?
Well, I certainly recognized the opportunity that afforded me, that I might be able to in some way guide, what his child might be like and have some influence over whether, you know, or not I could, increase the best and decrease the worst. I didn't want to let my astrological engineering interfere or get in the way of my wife's health. That was the primary concern for me. So
sure.
When I knew that we had a choice, my wife said that she wanted to have the child earlier because it would be far worse to be scheduled for a C-section later and then end up having to go into natural labor anyway and then get a C-section anyway, an emergency one. So, the official due date was January 31st, and the doctor gave us a choice, basically any day or any weekday, beginning at 9:30 in the morning, from January 23rd to the 31st. So, given that my wife wanted to have the baby earlier, I kind of gave us more a special preference to the days earlier in that range, January 23rd and January 24th. Were really the only two options. In my mind, I didn't really want to let it go much later, and because I was afraid, an emergency C-section.
Right.
So, but it also just so happened that between those two dates, that January 24th had some favorable things. So, it's not really too much of a choice. You sort of have a choice, but I mean, it's still within the range of realistic possibilities. So
sure, yeah, and I remember that beforehand, or when you were trying to decide. Because when did you decide? It was like a week or two, or maybe 3 weeks before.
It was around early January, early January.
I remember you were talking to other astrologers about it on like a Facebook forum. And you seem to have some ambivalence because you're trying to decide what would be best in terms of, I guess, from an ethical standpoint. On the one hand, you could argue different parts of this. On the one hand, is it ethical to pick a person's, to elect the chart for a person's birth, given the premise that in some sense that you might almost lock a person into not only certain positive things, but also potentially certain negative or challenging things.
You know, I don't think it's unethical. I mean, as long as it doesn't, as long as the health of the mother and the baby are being kept at the forefront, I don't think it's totally unethical to elect a birth chart, because you're already responsible for everything that basically happens to them anyway. I mean, is it that much worse if you have also elected the time that they were born? I mean, I know it does make you responsible for every bad and good thing that happens to them, but at the same time, you're also responsible for them living it all and a whole range of experiences that they won't have any control over and that are a direct result of choices that you've made. So it's not really that much more than what you're already assuming responsibility for. So I don't think it's totally unethical.
Sure.
And I think especially since I have, the astrological knowledge to possibly try to rectify a better chart. But I think it's, in some ways, it's also a fool's errand, because if we accept the basic premise of astrology that, things are predestined so that we are able to say something about what happens in the future, then the birth is going to happen at whatever time it's going to happen anyway. And I think we kind of saw that a bit with James, because I was trying to decide between, whether it would be better to have him be a Pisces rising or an Aries rising, because the Pisces rising, then Jupiter would be the ruler of the ascendant and it would be in a better position because it's in Cancer in the fifth. But then the chart was generally more eminent with Aries rising, even though it was more problematic because of the contrary to the sect Mars ruling the ascendant. So, but what ended up happening is he ended up being Taurus, and I didn't even think it was going to be that late. There were a few complications right before the surgery. They unsuccessfully tried to give my wife a spinal, which is basically delivering medicine right into the spine, which would numb the experience. And it also happened later because there was an emergency C-section that came in at the time that James would have. So while Aries was rising, there was a woman across from us in the hall who was going to have an emergency C-section. So there were kind of a few last-minute things ended up happening that ended up making him be born right at the time that he was.
Right.
So, I tried to influence it, to what degree I ethically could, but ultimately he came when he, and I guess the universe or whatever, decided he was going to come out and what kind of fate and life he would have.
Right. Yeah, and it ended up working out really well in the sense that ahead of time you were initially wrestling with the issue early in January about, on the one hand, is it ethical to pick the birth chart, and isn't that kind of a weighty thing to do, to choose someone's birth chart for them prior to being born? But then on the other hand, one of the counter arguments that I thought of was, having that knowledge, having a background in astrology, being an astrologer, and also having a background and generally practicing electional astrology, would it be ethical for you not to elect the birth chart or not to try to give your child sort of the best start that they could? I mean, isn't that something that you do, that most parents do in most areas of a person's life, that to whatever extent they can influence some control over their environment in order to try and make life, perhaps better for the child than it was for the parent, or in order to try and look out for them, that you try and do some of those things? And I think that almost became part of the argument that you ended up going with, was that it made more sense to try and help rather than thinking that it was too weighty.
But the thing that boggles my mind is, what if I hadn't elected the birth chart and he came at the same time anyway?
Yeah, I mean, we do see that happen sometimes in terms of, people sometimes do things and end up with like the perfect chart that day without having used an electional astrologer or the chart. I mean, I've seen instances in which somebody ended up using the very chart that I would have used.
Right.
In order to, I remember actually a few years ago, several years ago, me and a friend, me and Austin Kopic, we were up late one night, like 2 a.m, and we're looking at the charts for that the next morning, because there's this huge pileup of planets in Sagittarius, and there was this really spectacular electional chart the next morning. And we said, you know, somebody's going to have a great chart. There's a great electional chart tomorrow. If somebody was born, they would have a great chart tomorrow morning. And then it turned out that our friend Andy on the other side of the world was having a baby that next morning, and that she ended up having it within like a 10 or 20 minute time span of what we
had great.
Sort of identified as like the best chart, this great electional chart for the next day. So sometimes that does happen naturally, but in your case, it was interesting because eventually once you had decided to elect it, you came to me and you and I together sort of looked at the charts and looked at what was available in that week that the doctor was giving you, but also with the consideration that your wife, Beth, really wanted to do it sooner rather than later. And when we looked at the charts, the best day really was
ended up being that time anyway. So right. That kind of makes me think that we might have gone along with the first day anyway. And then all of the same little events that led right up to it would have occurred the same way. I almost think it's like driving down a hill. You know, even if you aren't pushing the gas, you are still going to get down the hill.
Sure. Yeah, and it was interesting also because on the one hand, you did end up choosing to exert some control over it by selecting the day that he ended up being born, but then you ended up leaving the other part of it, which was the actual birth time, was left very much up in the air. So it ended up being kind of a 50-50 thing, and that ended up being the sort of resolution in the end, which was that the birth date you chose, but the birth time you knew that it would just be a certain range in the morning. So we had figured out that it would be one of two or three rising signs. But then it was interesting. So that part of it, at least the actual final time, ended up being left up to chance. And then it was interesting that morning, because of delays in the operating room, that something happened before that it ended up getting, I think, almost delayed even later than anything we'd even anticipated as being.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny, though, because it actually worked out because I was obsessed with getting the moon bona fide. I really wanted the moon to be making a separating aspect from one benefic and applying to another benefic. And Pluto was kind of screwing things up that day. Because the moon would normally be applying directly to Jupiter, but Pluto is making a very close aspect to Jupiter as well. So it's funny because it so happened that it was actually so much later that the moon had passed its aspect to Pluto and was directly applying towards Jupiter, the benefic of the sect.
Right. So it was separating from, it was applying to a trine with Jupiter. And then right after that, a sextile with Venus?
That's correct.
Okay.
So it was a lot of like the most sort of a lot of the prioritized things I was trying to go for on that day ended up happening. And then it's also really funny because I remember being in the operating room right, you know, as things were happening. And I was looking down at my phone, you know, which I had an atomic clock app and I had my wristwatch, which I had synced up to the atomic time as well, just in case like one failed for whatever reason. And I knew that Gemini rising was coming. I knew that Gemini was coming, and I knew that I didn't want Gemini because Gemini is ruled by Mercury, and Mercury that day actually happened to be corrupted. Now, I know it has
it was like applying to a square Saturn.
It's applying to a square with Saturn and separating from a trine with Mars. So it was technically corrupted, although because Mercury was in Aquarius, it was actually applying towards its domicile, which is sort of a ameliorating factor. But I knew that Gemini was going to be a very tough rising sign for him to have. So I was kind of like really hoping, like, please, Doris, please, Doris. And I mean, I was also thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I'm having a baby. There are a lot of feelings at that moment.
Right.
There are a lot of feels. But I would be lying if I said I wasn't, watching the time really, really closely.
Yeah, but, you were texting me from like the operating room, telling me that it was close, and I was casting the chart and getting back to you on what the rising sign was still at that point.
All right. And but, you know, it's funny because, you know, I the time that the Ascendant, like, didn't really seem to resonate with anything. When I was trying to think of what Ascendant he might have, I was thinking of, you know, natal connections between, you know, my chart or Beth's chart or something like that. I figured I had to kind of tie in that way. Like, my Venus is conjunct my dad's Ascendant, and my mom's Ascendant is generally opposite of my Ascendant. So I figured there might be some kind of confluence like that. But I, it's really funny that it ended up being 29 Taurus, because I looked back through my chronology of my relationship with Beth, and I kept finding this degree popping up throughout our entire relationship.
For example,
I have the chart for the time that my wife and I first met, and the moon was at 29 Scorpio at that moment.
Okay, so that was his. So that's your future son's descendant.
And then on the night that me and Beth first shared our first kiss, Jupiter was at 29 Taurus.
Nice. So son's future ascendant.
And then on the night that I decided to move in with Beth, which wasn't too long after we had started seeing each other, the moon was at 29 Taurus, conjunct the North Node at 29 Taurus.
Okay.
And then Beth and I actually were able to...
And that was actually a very dramatic, like,
that night. That was a very dramatic night.
That was like the night that Obama gave his acceptance speech or something, right?
Yeah. That was a very... that was a very tumultuous time, because we were actually, we'd just broken up on that day, and I was kind of going back and forth of whether it was like the right thing to do, because I felt like we might have been moving too fast, because it was, you know, but I eventually decided that I couldn't let her go, and I was just drawn to her, and I just felt it was what I just had to do.
And the moon was exactly conjunct the North Node at 29 Taurus?
It was at 29 Taurus and the North Node. I literally left the house as Obama was beginning his speech. And, you know, I would not have missed, you know, something as huge as that.
You had just spent like the past four years leading up to that point, focusing on nothing but politics and writing dozens of articles about the astrology of the upcoming election. And then in the end, you kind of... disregarded it in order for this relationship. So it was actually a really striking moment in your own chronology, and it's really amazing. I mean, there's a lot of people who use the nodes that are really impressed, would be very impressed by this. And I'm, after downplaying the nodes and not using them as much over the past several years, this is one of the things that happened during the 2012 election, one of many nodal
connections
and transits, specifically, like transits of the nodes, that was really clearly very pivotal, that has convinced me to start paying much more attention than I was previously.
Oh no, absolutely. The nodes are serious. Like, it's serious stuff. I'm still on the fence about what exactly they signify. I know there's a lot of different traditions which have a lot of different ideas about them. But they almost seem like, points that they're kind of like eclipse points. They kind of remind me of eclipses, how they're almost like windows into the sublunar sphere, like where there are these kind of concrete manifestations. For example, the date that Facebook was started was a Sun Neptune conjunction square the nodes. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, this virtual world, you know, entered the world stage. And became this really like globally important, force, which is very Neptunian. You know, a lot of people waste a lot of time on this, you know, virtual platform. It's very Neptune. Mm-hmm. And then even with James himself, on the day that he was born, the South Node was at 2 degrees of Scorpio, which is the degree of my moon. And it was square his sun, which is at 3 Aquarius, and it was square and is opposite my wife's sun, which is at 3 Leo. So there's this big, like, grand cross configuration between his sun, my wife's sun, my moon, and the nodes. So, and we know that the sun and the moon have to do with masculine and feminine qualities, and so it's kind of interesting that like it's basically saying that the union of these people has produced this this other person.
Right.
And, you know, it's literally entered the world.
And speaking of, there were a couple of other instances of like 29 Taurus showing up, right?
Yes. Yeah. We actually were able to deduce the night that we must have conceived James, because I don't think many other people get this opportunity, but
no, I'm just laughing at him listening to this in the future. Yeah, his father talking about the night, having the chart of his conception chart.
Yeah, we figured out what time and what day it would have had to have been. And the night of conception, the sun was at 29 Taurus, just a few days before we got married.
Okay.
And then the time that I actually realized these connections between 29 Taurus and Scorpio, the moon itself at that time was at 29 Scorpio. That was like a day or so after James was born.
Right.
Because I was trying to think about, you know, where 29 Taurus came from, because it just seemed totally out of left field. Because I don't have anything at 29 Taurus or Scorpio in my chart, and nor does Beth, my wife.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any lots that are even at those positions. I mean, I do have errors, I believe, at 27 degrees when you use the nocturnal calculation, but even then, the focus seems to really be on 29, not 27.
Sure.
So this ended up
raising a point about...
Right. To me, it's really... it's kind of thrown me for a loop, because, I mean, were those transits then throughout my relationship with Beth, were those in anticipation of James's ascendant, or did the transits essentially, quote-unquote, cause James's ascendant to be 29 Taurus? It's almost like he always had to have his ascendant at 29 Taurus because of these transits, or were these transits kind of because it's kind of a problem, because usually, you know, the reason why we say a transit is important is because it makes a contact to your natal chart. But in this case, we seem to have transits which are affecting a chart which doesn't even exist yet.
Yeah, it's a foreshadowing.
Yeah, and that seems very, I don't know, that's very spooky. You know, and I'm wondering now if there are any other examples of this.
Right.
Because that would be really, really super weird. Unfortunately, yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that becomes one of those things that's very hard to study, and that this is a very interesting case because you're an astrologer and you're paying attention to it. But it relates back to the previous show I recorded with Kenneth Miller about whether it's better to have celebrity charts or to use personal charts for study purposes or for examples. And that this is actually a good example of the virtues, and probably the ultimate virtue, of using a personal chart like your own or people close to you, is that you can follow and see really what would otherwise from the outside look like minor things, but you can actually notice things like this that you otherwise wouldn't notice in someone else's life.
Actually, you know, what's funny is I think right now the moon is at 25 Scorpio. So we're coming up again to this degree, and of course it makes me a little worried about when Saturn hits 29 Scorpio as well, a little later this year.
Sure.
Because now I know that it also directly affects him, but then might also have, you know, implications for, you know, relationship with Beth. But you know, those are you know, it's just one of those things that's so kind of ubiquitous that now I'm getting a little paranoid any time.
He has a day chart, so Saturn should be a little bit more constructive for him. And he also has like the Sun and Mercury and Venus, actually a bunch of his planets in that sign. So it's certainly an important planet, but not necessarily too negative or too malefic.
Yeah, yeah. It's not. No, I'm not too worried. And ultimately, I guess it's kind of like the general question about whether it's you know, ethical to elect a birth or not. I mean, you could almost say the same thing about life. I mean, you know, you have your own chart with your own predetermined a fortune, basically, and we all have to face, you know, bad transits. You know, we don't get a whole lot of choice. There as much as we'd like.
Sure. I guess it just becomes like it's almost like a chicken or the egg type scenario where you might ask, you know, if like let's say let's use instead of using his actual chart, let's use like a hypothetical chart. Let's say you ended up electing a chart and you had to put like Mars in the seventh house in a day chart, and it's very poorly placed, and there's other negative indications, let's say, for relationships. And let's say that the person then grew up and they had major difficulties somehow in the sphere of relationships, or that somehow turned out to be the part of their life where, for some reason, often, you know, let's say things outside of their control, that was just the area of their life that did not go very well. And this general question of, you know, whose fault is that? Does that then become your fault as the astrologer because you chose, you know, that specific time for that person to be born? Or is it not your fault? I mean, is it something that's out of your hands because perhaps it would have turned out that way anyways for some reason, or because that was the way it had to be, or it was meant to be, or there's, I guess, some issues, questions surrounding that, you might say?
Well, I think that's a good question. With James, it's funny. I tried to exert so much control over the time, but then ultimately it seems like the time is already etched in stone. You know, that it was going to be 29 Taurus, I guess. One question I have is why wouldn't it have been 29 Scorpio? The general axis seems to be significant, but...
Well, I mean, one of the problems there is just the fact that it had to be a C-section at that point. Mm-hmm. And so that...
It was almost like it always had to happen this way. I don't know if we can really freely elect a chart. What if electing the chart itself is... also a part of your fate. I don't know if you can really escape that. I guess I'm kind of tearing down the like point of doing electional astrology, but I don't know how you really get around that. It's you know, if we accept the basic astrological premise, then it sort of almost becomes a pointless exercise. But at the same time, if I hadn't done these things, who knows if it could have changed or could have turned out differently. But I don't know. I think the example of, you know, all the transits for 29 Scorpio and Taurus seem to just it just says to me that it was always going to have to be 29 Taurus.
Sure.
And that it wasn't really in my control, even though I tried. So, but that's why I think it's okay to still try to elect, because it's going to happen the way it does anyway. So you might as well get in on the details.
Sure. Well, and I wouldn't even, I don't know if I go as far as saying it wasn't in your control, because that's one of the funny things about, especially like the ancient conceptualization of fate, is that fate is not just something that's external to you. That's, you know, like the, what's that movie, about fate, where Final Destination, where, you know, they escape death, and then death is chasing them, and it's messing with things in their environment, which are causing these freak accidents to happen. But it's all like this external thing, and that's oftentimes, I feel like, in our culture, that's how fate is conceptualized. But in the ancient world, and when, you know, Western astrology, when Hellenistic astrology and this type of horoscopic astrology using birth charts with aspects and progressions and transits and everything else originated, their conceptualization of fate was not just that it's an external thing, it's definitely that, but also that it's an internal thing, that even your very character and psyche and the actions and the choices that you make are somehow tied into the causal nexus of fate, so that even your own choices to some extent become fated in some way, or at least can be fated in some sense. And that's almost what this almost implies to me, is not that you didn't have a choice, but even the choices that you did make in some sense may have been, to a certain extent,
fated
or predetermined, or at least
inclined
in a certain direction.
No, I definitely agree with that. I guess I'm just saying that in itself is like not having a choice. But even though I have had choices which in themselves are fated.
Sure.
Yeah, it's weird stuff.
Yeah, it presents an interesting problem when it comes to electional astrology, just because, you know, even though I think you know, usually in modern times, in like 20th and 21st century astrology, we assume electional astrology is evidence of astrologers having free will, or it's some evidence that astrology does not imply that things are completely predetermined. But it just, things like what you're pointing out in terms of his ascendant and the number of different instances of foreshadowing of those, that axis of those degrees as being important in your relationship with your wife prior to the birth of your son, and then that degree coming up is important and actually becoming his ascendant, and then he's born or comes into the world at that moment. It kind of raises some of those issues in terms of questions about how much free will we actually do exert over things, and if it's completely free or if it's still tied in to a certain extent with, you know, who we are and where we're going.
I think the other really compelling thing about this is that those degrees didn't even have, like, they didn't even bear a relation to either of our shots. There's right. Nothing, not even midpoints or anything. Like, they just...
I mean, there's probably some midpoint, right?
Maybe. Maybe. I didn't see any when I was looking. Okay. I think that's what makes it all the more compelling, is the fact that it's not even related to any of our charts. It really is a really kind of left field degree, but then it was his ascendant.
Sure.
And it just always had to be there. And then the fact that the ascendant was so close to being Gemini. I mean, this is, you know, it would be, we might even say there's some leeway if his ascendant was like 15 Taurus and all of these connections were like at 13 Taurus, or like, you know, 17 Taurus, 20 Taurus even. But all of this is just right on the dot, 29 Taurus. If it was any different, it would be a different sign. So it's really, in some ways, I feel like the preciseness of these connections, I feel like it's just a, kind of a cosmic message, like, you know, we are in control. but I understand how my role in it is also, you know, it feels free.
Sure.
even if it's still following the script. And ultimately, that's, I think Nick Dagan best said this once, that ultimately you have to just pretend like you have free will, act like you do have free will, but even if you know in the back of your mind that maybe you might not. I think he said that. Right. I apologize if he didn't. I remember reading that, him saying that a long time ago. But that kind of stuck with me. Like, act like you have free will. Try to make the best decisions you can, even if you can't be entirely sure that they're really yours.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the problems in arguing about this issue about fate versus free will, is that even if everything hypothetically was completely predetermined, we'd still have the experience. We'd still experience life as if we're making choices completely freely and completely out of our own autonomy, which we assume, you know, that we could choose A or B at any given moment, and that there's nothing that could predetermine that could tell you which it was going to be ahead of time. And
right.
Even if that wasn't true, we would still have the experience as if it was completely undetermined. So it almost doesn't make a difference in some sense, or at least it makes it very difficult to decide. But your point about, you know, this not showing up, about how that axis or how those degrees of 29 Taurus and 29 Scorpio don't show up in either of your charts, is really interesting, because it raises an issue that I was thinking about recently. That's kind of an argument in terms of defense of the time twins issue, where, you know, one of the arguments against astrology is about people who are born at the same time or in the same location and end up having the same charts, having different destinies, or ending up doing different things, or even two twins who are born at different times having different destinies. And
this is almost a complete refutation of the idea that, like, they're not going to be any different. It's almost like the chronology extends before birth. You know, that birth is still the important moment, but that the universe is already giving signs, you know, that it knows about this person coming into the world, and makes that degree relevant in the formation of that person between the parents that, you know, come together to make the child.
Yeah. Well, and basically what it shows is it's not just the person's birth chart that has some bearing on who they will mm-hmm. be and what will end up happening to them and the sort of external circumstances that end up that they find themselves in. Because when a person's born, let's say two people are born at a hospital at the same time, and then they go home to different families and different parents, each of those parents has their own birth chart. And then both of those, you know, couples, let's say let's just assume it's a couple, both two people, you know, each of them has their own synastry and their own, you know, special midpoints and other degrees that are sensitive points for that couple. And the infant ends up growing up in that environment with their different like synastry interactions with these different parents and with these different like sensitive degrees interacting with their chart in different ways and emphasizing probably different birth chart placements, so that that ends up being a lot more complex. Or you end up having to realize basically that things are a lot more complex than just what you see in the birth chart, that it's not just the birth chart that's operative, but there's other charts that end up.
Oh yeah, totally. And there's a lot of really striking correlations between James's chart and the charts of like myself and my wife and my family members. You know, my mother was born with Venus conjunct Pluto. I was born with Venus conjunct Pluto. Mm-hmm. So now my son has Venus conjunct Pluto.
Right. Venus actually retrograde stationing conjunct Pluto.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very...
Taurus rising.
Yeah. Very dramatic Venus stationing conjunct Pluto opposite Jupiter.
Yeah.
And then that's the other thing is that he has Jupiter, I think, at the same degree as his grandparents. They all have Jupiter in Cancer. And then his moon is in Scorpio, just like my moon's in Scorpio. My wife was Venus square Jupiter. He was born with Venus opposite Jupiter. There just seems to be a lot of, I was born with Mars and Libra. He's born with Mars and Libra. Mm-hmm. So like, there's a lot of funny ways in which, yeah, the charts are connected. And he was also born fairly close to the Mars station, and that seems to be a theme in my family. I wasn't born with Mars retrograde, but two of my brothers are Mars retrograde. My mom is Mars retrograde. My grandmother, my father's side, is Mars retrograde. There's a lot of Mars retrograde stuff in my family, so it's just kind of fitting. He's, you know, he fits right in. The other really interesting thing about the time he was born is his Saturn is essentially the Saturn return of my older brother, which in essence means that the birth of my son is the Saturn return of when my parents first became parents.
Okay.
So, you know, their Saturn returns, they became, you know, started having children, and then when the Saturn return of the having children came along, yeah, they became parents. So it was the next link in the chain, rather. So, yeah, there's a lot of really weird stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's pretty common when you look at, familial connections, astrological connections.
Yeah. And that's definitely, I think, a good or important and perhaps overlooked defense in terms of the time twins argument mm-hmm. and a potential way to refute it. Although, I think it's like a technical and conceptual refutation that astrologers would see and understand and take into account, although it might be kind of hard to make that argument in a debate because it involves going into technical issues that are a little bit more complicated or complex to explain.
Yeah, I mean, they'd have a real, really good argument, you know, with you and Katy Perry.
Oh, yeah, my time twin. That's your favorite. You keep reminding me that Katy Perry was also born on the same day as me. But we don't know if – I mean, I want to say
– I don't know if we have her birth time.
No.
It makes sense. I mean, I think, you know, honestly, you know, you should use, like, her album cover as, like, your book cover and just, like, Photoshop your face onto, like, her face.
Right.
You know.
I'll see what I can do.
But yeah.
Well, you actually discovered that she was into astrology evidently recently, right?
Yeah, apparently
or something.
She has like a relationship with Obama, and she She's into like astrology and aliens, but not entirely sure if she actually meant astronomy. But
right.
but I don't know. She seems like the kind of person who might be like into a horoscope or something. And you know, celebrities are random like that. They, you know, some of them are really into astrology. But yeah, apparently she said that she, you know, wanted to bring up these topics with the president. So I was joking with Chris about how, you know, this is sort of evidence of, you know, the similarities between them, because they're both like political astrologers in their own way.
All right.
Anyway, off topic.
So, so this whole, I thought this would be a good show to record, because I think this issue is going to, this ethical issue, or to whatever extent it's an ethical or practical issue. And we should probably, one of the things that might be interesting in a few minutes is maybe looking at the different charts that we considered that day, and why we ended up going with this chart, or what ascendants we were sort of considering and what the differences were.
True.
But I thought this would be a good topic, because I think it's going to become an issue that astrologers deal with much more frequently, because I sat in on a lecture a few years ago at the, what was it? It was an NCGR conference in, I think it was in like Baltimore or something, back in like 2010. And an astrologer from the UK, Wendy Stacey, gave a really excellent presentation where she presented, I think it's like a master's or a PhD research that she's doing. I think that she's getting ready to publish, where she showed how it's basically a study showing that the use of C-sections is basically on the rise and is becoming more and more popular and almost more and more trendy in modern times for numerous different reasons, but the end effect is that the numbers keep increasing every single year, so that we're moving towards a society where induced births, or where C-sections, become almost like the norm, or become much more prevalent than they are even now. And some of the implications that that has for astrologers, because one of the implications is that doctors prefer it, or tend to prefer C-sections, because then you pick it, and they tend to recommend it, because then they can make it fit their schedule, basically.
So they also get paid a lot more too.
Oh, right. That was the other point. They get paid more, and it gets to fit their schedule, instead of, you know, going into a labor that lasts for 24 hours or something, and then having the birth take place at like 2 a.m. They say, you know, I can schedule it in at 1 p.m. after my golf game on Thursday. as a result of that, there's this interesting side effect for astrologers, which is that if it's being scheduled around doctors' schedules, then that means that what it means, and what it already means for virtually all C-sections, is that they end up being on weekdays, so that it's Monday through Friday, so it's no more weekend births, no more Saturday or Sunday births, but then also, because it's being scheduled around the doctor's schedule, it ends up, all of the births end up being taking place during business hours, basically during the day. So between like 9 to 5 ends up being the window that all of these children end up being born. So the astrological, you know, result of that is that you end up having a whole generation of children that were all born with the sun, with a day chart, with the sun somewhere in the top hemisphere of the chart, in between like the 12th to maybe the 8th house.
That would make Mars transits a lot more dangerous for the general population, since they would all have Mars contrary to the sect.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of, and she started getting into some of this towards the end of her lecture, in terms of, she was just raising the question of, what does this mean for astrologers, and is this going to have a major societal impact, in terms of, you know, does that actually mean something, that you have an entire generation of people who all have the sun in like the 10th house or the 11th house or the 9th house, which is a much more visible and much more social and public, you know, part of the chart, versus having, you know, an equal amount of people who are born with the sun in the 4th house or the 3rd house or the 5th, which are much more private from sort of a modern psychological standpoint. But then, like you mentioned, there's even other implications in terms of traditional astrology, that it kind of wreaks havoc with other astrological doctrines, like the doctrine of sect, which is the difference that there's an actual interpretive difference in understanding what the planets signify, depending on if the person was born during the day or at night. And you mentioned Mars, for example, that Mars is traditionally held to be more malefic or more negative in a day chart and to be more positive or more constructive in a night chart. But if you have everybody born during the day, does that mean then that astrologically it shifts it so that you have a large generation of people that have Mars as the more problematic planet in their chart? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question or how that's going to play out.
That's weighty.
Yeah, weighty thoughts. But your personal struggle just was interesting to me because it might be something that comes up in the future, and people don't really discuss this very much, or I haven't seen. I did see one. There was one lecture years ago when I was attending Kepler that was given by Dennis Flaherty, who gave a lecture on the birth of his two twins, and the way that he was paying attention to the astrological chart. And he kind of came to a similar conclusion in terms of them being born at the best moment or at the moment that they were supposed to be born. But otherwise, it seems like this topic isn't discussed very much. And I haven't seen a lot of arguments either way in terms of whether it is ethical or whether it's not ethical or what have you. Although I know that I've seen various people sort of expressing their views from time to time one way or another.
Yeah, it really parallels the general discussion people have about, genetic manipulation, genetic engineering. You know, what happens, if people, have such a strong preference for the sex of the child that they would decide maybe to terminate the pregnancy if it wasn't the gender they wanted. You know, if they already had, like, four girls and they wanted a son, or they already had, boys and they wanted a girl, or they just had a preference that, that might throw off kind of the natural equilibrium that's supposed to exist to, maintain a healthy balance of males and females. I think there would be a similar issue in astrologically, and I guess then throughout the society, that you would have a lot of people who be more – I don't know how to express that but yes, sun in the upper hemisphere, I guess that would make people who aren't really concerned with their siblings or families or children or work and money, or rather possessions, the second, third, fourth, and fifth and sixth houses.
Well, one of the comments, I think, I don't remember if Wendy Stacy made it or if it was somebody that was like in the audience, but somebody made an offhand reference in that lecture to like the YouTube generation and like the generation of, people right now that are growing up, and everybody's like using social media and trying to become, kind of a star and putting themselves out there.
Sure.
In this really weird and interesting way.
I was actually just reading an article the other day about how, payment is basically being replaced by, likes and, social media attention, businesses people are getting to, are working for, or working towards, promotions and giveaways by companies which aren't really like, they're all based on popularity. Basically, the popularity is the new currency. So that would be interesting that more and more people were being born during the day.
Yeah. I mean,
I haven't really thought about that.
That's a good point. I mean, there's, like I was watching an interview yesterday with like 50 Cent, and he has 7 million followers on Twitter. And so a lot of advertisers for just like random things want to advertise, with him. Like he became a millionaire from promoting vitamin water just because he's very visible as a celebrity. And therefore that becomes the access point for advertisers to use to get the word out there, I guess, about their product. Anyway, but that's kind of far afield.
Yeah.
One of the points that you were going towards was, how much can we liken this to something like eugenics or like, gene selection and some of the things that are starting to be done in that direction? Like, it makes me think of the film from the mid-90s, Gattaca, about this, sort of futuristic society that's driven by eugenics where, children are basically conceived through genetic manipulation in order to ensure that they possess the best traits of their parents. And isn't that, one could make the argument that that's kind of what, if astrologers were regularly using electional astrology to elect births, that it would be something almost akin to that. And you get some of the same arguments in favor of or against, I would think. Except with astrology, it's a little bit more mixed, because even if you picked, I think every electional astrologer, every person who's ever tried to do electional astrology knows there's only so much that you can control. And for whatever, you know, good things that you put in the chart, you're going to also end up with some bad things that you can't control.
Yeah, electional still has limits. I mean, you still have the limits of what is there. Whereas, you know, obviously genetic manipulation is really, you know, wide open as far as what options you can consider.
Right.
But I think, if we had some sort of totalitarian society in the future where astrology was, like, totally taken seriously, I think there would probably just be limits on when people could have children to ensure that, only, I guess it would be, just like Gattaca, and everyone would be born with these, like, amazing charts. Because the government wouldn't want, someone to be born with a chart that could overthrow it. But then that government would also have to be aware that, like, their government would have to end at some point, nothing just lasts and lasts and lasts forever. Every institution, will have some Saturn cycle, which will take them out, even hundreds of years into the future or something, So a government that would acknowledge the existence of the astrological phenomenon would have to accept it in every way, to accept their own mortality in a sense, as well as of the obvious temptation to try to control what charts people have.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that makes me think about is societally, actually, we already probably have that in terms of not governments saying that people can have kids, but I remember, like, a few years ago, there was some mass thing that was happening somewhere. It was either in, like, India or China, where everybody was trying to have a baby in this year because it was, like, the year of the the dragon or something like that. Something auspicious was happening either in Chinese astrology or Indian astrology, and so everybody was trying to have a kid that year. And they were basically, that's like a mass example of using a type of electional astrology for the purpose of basically, like, manipulating and getting the best birth chart you can, I guess.
Wow. I hadn't heard about that. That's really interesting.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what it was, because I don't remember if it was Chinese astrology or Indian astrology. I want to say it was probably Indian astrology. Yeah, but I don't remember exactly what the configuration it was. It was something that only lasted for a year, which makes me think that it was either Jupiter or it was some Chinese zodiac thing, which also lasts for a year. But I'll have to look that up. Okay, well, let's see. The last thing that we wanted to touch upon was there's kind of a debate, and this came up. I see this come up from time to time. It's this general question that astrologers sometimes have, or actually, maybe it's not astrologers who have it as much as sometimes skeptics try and pose it to astrologers, I think, which is the birth chart still valid if the person was born by a C-section versus a natural birth? And most astrologers just say yes.
Yeah.
And I think most of the time, people who say no just have sort of a fundamental misunderstanding of astrology and what it's about. Although, in defense, perhaps, of people who say no, Michel Gauquelin, who discovered the Mars effect and related supposed statistical correlations that supposedly proved astrology in the mid to late 20th century, he tried to say that the Mars effect and some of the things that they were finding statistically disappeared in induced births, like with C-sections and stuff. So they said that there is an observable statistical effect where Mars just above the ascendant or just past the midheaven was correlating with eminent athletes or the birth of eminent athletes if a person had that in their chart, but that the effect somehow disappeared if the person was born as a result of a C-section or something. So I don't know if that still stands up, or if that still holds up, or if that's true. I've never met anybody who had a birth chart that was born through a C-section where the birth chart did not match their life or their personality. Like, that does not, and I don't think I've ever really met anybody who claimed that that was the case. That
one possible explanation I just thought of right now is perhaps children who are born through a C-section may not, maybe they are statistically less likely to be like as strong or something, or physically, you know, fit enough or something to become a professional athlete, which would, you know, allow them to exhibit, you know, the effect of being like some sort of professional athlete with a, you know, more or less angular Mars in the 10th or 1st.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah,
that's just a totally. I mean, that's basically me saying that everyone who's born with a C-section is like weak or something. But
yeah,
that's obviously not what I mean. But something like that. I don't know. Maybe that'd be interesting to see if the other effects you noticed went away for induced birth. Because then I guess you'd have more of a point. But you know, if something doesn't depend on your ability. You know, being born is a physical thing, so an occupation that depends on a physical thing could be potentially impacted. But for, you know, his Jupiter effect for, like, politicians or something, you know, maybe that's not necessarily something that depends on your, you know, physicality. So that could maybe that effect still holds up. But no, I haven't ever heard that before.
Yeah.
But that's really interesting.
And I mean, one of the, there's some people, I can imagine some people invoking that. And I guess I've heard a few limited people invoking that. It's just, I'm very hesitant at this point to just adopt any of Gokhale's findings at this point as given conclusions about the nature of astrology, because it is like scientifically valid conclusions about the nature of astrology, because they're still very much disputed. And the only one that ever really was, tested and reproduced by other groups, which was the Mars effect, is still contested to this day. So
I mean, I think the better argument that someone could bring up is just to ask, why isn't the conception part, why isn't the conception chart more valid than the birth chart? That is really the sort of you know, cellular beginning of someone's existence.
Right.
You know, I think it kind of comes back to how, like, what you see the mechanism of astrology as being. You know, if you think it's, if you think it operates through signs, then I think you'd be more, I think you'd be more on the side of considering the birth as the more significant moment. You know, that the positions of the planets at that time are a sign of that person's entrance into the world.
Right, it's a more symbolically significant moment.
Right, whereas if you sort of saw it as a more like physical or causal kind of thing, then, you know, maybe the conception chart would be the more like sort of precise moment.
Yeah, and I think that's why many skeptics do actually bring up the conception chart, and they say, why don't you use the conception chart? And
again, I know, I think the 29 Scorpio Taurus thing with James kind of throws that out the window, though, because the correlations hold up before he was even conceived. So, you know, it's clearly operating through signs rather than just kind of a mechanical, like, natural biological process. It's mysterious. It's not, you know, totally clockwork. It's just the heavens are acting as signs for things which are happening.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I think that that's the case, but I could easily see somebody arguing that at those times in the past where 29 Scorpio and Taurus came up, that there was some sort of celestial influence that was hitting at that moment that happened to be prompting you guys to do things like,
right. But my point is that it makes the birth chart more important than the, night of conception.
Okay, sure. Yeah. And I mean, that just gets into all sorts of issues.
Right.
I mean, from a Hellenistic, because Ptolemy mentions this issue, like he talks about this issue of conception versus birth. And he says that while conception is the start, or it's the inception of the physical, the physicality or the physical material of the person that becomes the person's body, that the moment of birth is the inception and is the start of their actual life as an independent entity from the mother. And this probably ties into other like Hellenistic theories of sort of conception versus birth that had to do with this perception that the they made an analogy that the fetus was like a piece of fruit that was on a tree, and that up until the moment of birth, the baby or the fetus is basically still an extension of the mother's body until that moment when it sort of falls off of the tree branch, so to speak. And then it's sort of this separate entity as a piece of fruit or as a human being who's starting its life at that point, rather than as an extension of the mother's body. But that, you know, at that point, you still come back to an issue of, is astrology working? Is that moment of birth and the alignment of the planets at that moment, are they acting as a sign or an omen of what will happen in this person's future? Or are they, is the alignment of the planets somehow causing or imprinting the person's what biology or their life or what have you with certain qualities at that moment? And I think you and I definitely both favor the notion that it's the former, that it's a matter of the alignment of the planets acting as a sign or an omen of future events. But I don't want to be too
For me, I think that's been conclusively proved by all of the stuff with James, because, you know, if it was just like an imprint, then it would be, then I think the night of conception would be the more appropriate like moment. But since the correlations extend back further, and because there isn't necessarily a good astrological reason why it should have been 29 Scorpio Taurus, because of the lack of, you know, those points being represented in either of the parents' charts, or even any other like lunations or eclipses, prenatal eclipses or prenatal conjunctions or anything before the birth or before the conception, just kind of highlights that it's not about causes, that it is about signs.
Sure.
But if anyone disagrees, I'm happy to hear the other side.
Yeah, I'm sure that, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of astrologers that disagree. Even though I think the omen or astrology is sign-based rationale is the predominant rationale, due to the effect of like Jung and to a lesser extent maybe Geoffrey Cornelius on modern astrology. But there's still a pretty significant segment of the astrological population that argues or believes that astrology works as a result of causes, and part of that is due to sort of scientific tradition. But there's this other part I was just reading recently, like Christopher Warnock published an article about how the planets influence life on Earth through magical means, and so there's this other contingent of like occultists who, and people like our friend Austin Coppock, who believe in things and use things like talismans and amulets, mm-hmm. which are based on this premise that you can, you know, elect a chart for the moment of creating a talisman or an amulet, and that you can somehow capture the energy of or the essence of a planet at that moment in time. So, there is still, and there always has been, a pretty healthy debate about this issue. But this definitely presents an interesting case for study when it comes to that debate. Mm-hmm. And even this whole issue, really, about the ethics of electional astrology, in some sense, when it comes to electing a birth chart, will to some extent hinge on where you fall with that debate. Because if you think it's matter of causes, or if it's a matter of signs, you might go one way or another about what you think is appropriate and what you think is not appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that we meant to cover when it comes to this issue. Can you think of any other points?
I'm not sure. I think we've gone over everything that we wanted to touch on. But this has been a great talk.
Okay. Well, you'll have to get back to me at some point in the future in terms of maybe paying attention to the birth chart, obviously, which you'll be doing, but also maybe since you actually have it, and it's actually very rare for a person to have it, paying attention to the conception chart to see if there is any relevance whatsoever, and if so, what that even is.
Well, I should probably qualify. I don't exactly have the moment that, you know, I mean, all right. I didn't have like a stopwatch or something, you know, like a, you know, wristwatch or something, you know, making sure I got the time. Part of the difficulty with really having an accurate conception chart is that it doesn't necessarily happen at the moment of, to put it, like orgasm. You know, it can happen like, you know, hours or minutes or I guess days afterward. Like it's not really known exactly. I mean, unless you had, you know, some sort of camera inside the woman, I don't think you'd be able to tell exactly when like the egg is fertilized.
Right.
But I do have the general time frame of when the deed was done. So I have that. And the sun, yeah, is at 29 Taurus. And the moon is at the moon around that time, around midnight, because it's very early in the morning / late at night. The moon was applying a trine to Taurus from Virgo. And it's interesting because my mom was born with the moon in Virgo, and Beth has moon in Virgo as well. So maybe that's something.
Interesting. So the women's side has...
The women's side, yeah, had the moon in the same sign that they were born with. And that's just interesting because it seems to, yeah, be some sort of theme with me and women with moon in Virgo.
Sure.
But...
Okay. Well,
yeah.
To sort of summarize this, I guess then what is our position on this is that we think it's, I mean, in practice, actually, we really ended up letting it go 50-50. Like, you exerted some control on picking the date, but ultimately you acknowledged that the time was not necessarily under your control, I think, right? I mean, is that...
Oh, yeah. No, the time wasn't necessarily under my control. And further than that, I think it was actually already kind of decided. Because of all these other correlations that I didn't even keep track of until I actually had to go back and figure out why the ascendant was 29 Taurus.
Sure.
So yeah, 50% was me trying to exert some control, and then 50% was, I think, already figured out.
Sure. And definitely, I guess really you can make arguments either way in terms of the ethicality of using electional astrology to elect a person's birth chart. And we could see it going either way, because certainly there's, you know, an argument you could make in favor of it, and there's an argument, an equally valid argument perhaps you could make against it. And then on the same token, that there's probably ways in which you could abuse it. If you did, even if it was ethical to do it, there's probably misuses of it or things that would not be good. Like, for example, if it got blown up into this huge thing where, like you said, if it was taken to its fullest extent, where like governments were mandating that people couldn't, you know, be born on certain dates or had to be born on other dates, that might get kind of weird.
Right.
So there might be a way where it could be taken beyond what's not just necessary, but what is sort of recommended or what sort of makes sense or what seems sort of natural in some ways. But otherwise, it seems like a perfectly okay thing to do. But one of the pitfalls, I mean, one of the things that'll be interesting for you is, and one of the things that I worry about when it comes to this sometimes, or when I've thought about it personally, is it's kind of like getting a tattoo. Like, I've never gotten a tattoo because I always think that, I read this advice once where they said, think back to when you were like 10 years old and what your favorite thing in the world was. And then, imagine if you had gotten a tattoo of whatever your favorite thing in the world was when you're 10 years old, and that you're living with that tattoo now, and whether you would be like fully happy with that. And I kind of think about that when it comes to electional astrology, you know, because sometimes our understanding of astrology grows and changes and sometimes shifts over the course of our life or our career as astrologers. And sometimes perhaps something we thought was a great electional chart at one point, we might look back on and say, that was terrible, or why wasn't I paying attention to this? Or
I guess we'll see, because I elected my marriage too, my wedding. Okay. And I also elected my proposal as well. There's really nothing that hasn't been elected that I couldn't have. I've been very election happy.
Sure.
In my personal life.
Well, then, yeah, you'll have to get back to us and we'll do a follow-up show in 5 years and 10 years and 30 years in order to see how that's going.
Yeah, I'll just tell James to always make sure he has a timepiece and when he's messing around with his girlfriend.
Right, and we'll have to have him on the show years later after he's gone through therapy in order to complain about what you did to his birth chart.
Fair enough.
No, I'm just kidding. Enough. It's a fantastic chart, and
it's actually not a bad chart. It's actually pretty decent. Like, I'm pretty surprised, pretty stoked. He's an awesome little kid. I love the hell out of him, and but I guess I would with his moon on my Venus. But it's so awesome.
Yeah, it's a good chart, and it was also interesting because based on what was available, that ended up being the best day that week because it was like we had when we were looking at it, we had an option between like the moon conjunct Mars for a couple of days in a day chart, and we wanted to avoid that. And then we had an option of like the moon exactly conjunct Saturn, and that was it. So it was like a bunch of not great choices, and then there was this one date that was like that Thursday, and it was the moon in Scorpio, but it was applying within like a degree or two to a trine with Jupiter in a day chart. Trine with Jupiter and then a sextile with Venus. So that really was the main thing.
You know what? In some ways, this is like cosmic retribution because my mom is really into astrology, and that's a big part of the reason how I ever got interested in astrology. And, considering that she knew a lot about astrology, she had to pick the one day in the year for me to be born with both the sun and moon in fall. So the fall and signs of Libra and Scorpio. So I feel kind of like, that I've rectified the wrong of my own birth by helping James have, a good astrological chart, right. Certainly better than mine.
By making sure he had the moon in Scorpio and Mars in Libra.
I guess that's me on him.
Right, that's definitely your influence. It's a very good chart. Can we post it? I mean, is that all right?
That's absolutely fine. Yeah, that's
we
absolutely
ask
fine.
Ask his permission or something.
I asked Beth, and she said that was fine.
Okay. Well, then, yeah, we'll post a copy of his chart on the webpage for this episode of the Astrology Podcast, and people can check it out, and you'll see what an excellent chart it is. And, all right. Well, thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming back for this episode of the Astrology Podcast, Patrick.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really fun.
Yeah, I'll have you back on again at some point in the future, maybe to talk about something. We'll see what happens. Well, all right. Well, that's it for this episode of the Astrology Podcast. If you like this episode, then please give it a good rating on iTunes and make sure to subscribe if you're not already through the email form on the right-hand side of the main page of the Astrology Podcast website. So that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.